There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins. Hey, everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29th, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30th, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1st, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at themeateater.com. Hope to see you at the show.
Hey, I'm KC.
And I'm Tyler.
And you're listening to
The Element Podcast.
Cast. What is happening, everybody?
What it is.
What it is, y'all. Guess what? We're back on Nebraska Furniture Mart couch. We haven't been for so long. We've been doing some traveling this past week. We'll tell you something about that in a little bit. But right now, what we need to tell you about is the date of July 15. That's July 15th, okay? Y'all have been asking and been wanting to do this thing, so we're going to do it, all right? We are doing a Texas DIY hunting meetup.
Yep. What? M-E-A-T.
M-E-A-T, that's meet right. Up. We're going to get us some meat together.
Yep. Howdy, folks, I'm Jack King Jr.
Tyler and I brought back some core memories the other day, and we're trying to figure out how many of the Dallas/Tyler area car jingles we could remember.
There's a lot of them, man.
There are a lot of them. Rusty Wallace is probably my favorite.
Yeah, that's a good one.
It's hard.
Rusty Wallace.
Or Westway Ford. You brought that one up. That's good, too. Yeah. Man, yeah. So many good ones. But July 15th, okay? For you Texas folks or anybody that cares to travel or might be traveling through the state anyways, that's a Friday evening. This is what y'all said you wanted to do, was a Friday evening. That's when most folks get away. Y'all know where Cabela's in Buda is, right? It looks like Buda on the map, but it's Buda.
Down there south of Austin.
That's right. In south Austin, kind of a good central location in the state. We are going to have a meetup. It's going to start at 6 p.m., and we're going to have some free door prizes and stuff, maybe some raffles. Going to be some free Onyx involved, some free Vector Arrows, maybe even some Cruiser Saddle stuff. I don't even know.
New merch from the Element.
Yeah, buddy.
We got some sick stuff in our fall collection that's popping up. We ought to have that stuff for you, some of it at least, available before anybody else gets a shot at it. I think Greg Abbott will be there, do you think? Didn't you invite him?
I had some distasteful jokes that I'm going to refrain from. I didn't invite Greg. I couldn't get through to him, man.
We did. We will have a Greg there, though.
We will have. Greg, maybe more than
Greg
one.
Greg Latham, which Greg. Is also sometimes known. He's known as David from... Brian knows David.
He blends them together.
Yeah, it's not to be confused with David Mac David, right?
Yeah, not that one.
Speaking of cars.
Greg Latham will be there. So if you want to see that guy, you need to be there.
You
so
do.
We what else are we going to have? Food?
HTH might be there.
He might be. I don't know. We got to talk to him to figure that out, and I don't know if I'm going to do that or not.
Brian Bostick, Bostick.
Yeah, he might get off.
Might be there.
Eric probably be there.
Yeah.
So all of our crew will be there, hanging out, having a good time. We're going to enjoy a Mexican food dinner together that's supposed to be real, real good. We're going to get this thing catered, make sure everybody's real full, fat, and happy. And we're going to do a couple things throughout the evening. It's going to be, of course, oriented around DIY hunting, specifically some really intensive map talk and study. We'll probably do the thing where we put up maybe some places of your choice or some random WMA things to check out on the big screen on a projector, and then kind of go through like our tactics when we go to tear apart a new place. And answer some questions on that. Then we'll do some Q&A stuff where y'all can just ask us whatever you want to, and we'll just have a big discussion. We might ask you some stuff too and try to draw from everyone's experiences to learn more and to be better hunters for the 2022 and beyond season. And then...
Size on,
yeah. like a bee would say it.
We are also going to show a... hunting video that is one of the best hunting videos we've ever put together.
Man, it's, dare I say, like nameless. It throws back to some nameless feels. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Because not often are Tyler and I in the tree together filming one another anymore. And that is exactly what happened. Y'all going to get to see the, what do they call it? Like when movie stars get to go watch their own film and invite their friends before it actually shows in theaters. You know what I'm talking about? Is it like, it's not a premiere, right? Or maybe it is a premiere. Yeah, because Heartland Bowhunter does the premiere thing where everybody shows up. It's going to be kind of like that for us. And you'll be able to be there for the premiere of the Oklahoma Public Land hunt.
Yeah, we sent in the A-team that day with the buck truck, and buck truck brought a buck out.
That's right.
So,
don't you know?
That film is like 40 minutes of awesomeness, and I'm really excited to show you. You get to watch it a good probably 2 months in advance before the public gets to watch it. So really cool, fun night. Gonna like Casey said, we're gonna give away a lot of different merch and Onyx and Vector arrows and stuff like that, and then we're just gonna be there for a Q&A action, some map looking, hanging out, eating Mexican food, and watching some awesome hunting videos. Mm-hmm. So
that is at Cabela's in Buda. So not any of the stuff around Cabela's in Buda. I had some people send me some maps and stuff, Bradley, trying to figure out where it's going to be. It's like at the actual Cabela's. They have some conference rooms there.
Yep.
So we'll have some signs up or something, I'm sure, to kind of help you navigate that whenever you go to Cabela's. But that's at 6 p.m., lasts about 8:30 or so. On Friday, July the 15th, you can get your tickets at theelementwild.com. We got to charge a little bit for this one, guys, but it ain't much. It's $30 each, and with the stuff you're going to walk out of there, including the Mexican food, you're going to feel real good about that. And that gum, with inflation, you better hop on it now because it might be $45 on the day of. Who knows? Anyways, hope a lot of y'all can make it. I know it's a little bit last minute, but between me having a baby and just a lot of other things going on this summer, this is the time that we're going to get it out there. So tell your friends, bring some friends, and let's make this thing go really, really awesome. Again, July 15th, 6 p.m., Cabela's in Buda, Element DIY Hunting Meetup. Now, Tyler, speaking of hunting.
Speaking of it.
As we like to do, let's talk a little hunting.
All right.
First off, you're about to leave and go possibly do some scouting on your vacation for a big hunt you have coming up.
I'd like to.
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah. Yep. Right. Don't feel super confident about being able to do that, but
you'll see the country at least.
I'll see the country, get to do some fishing, probably see some mule deer, maybe some elk.
A couple summers back, I was doing some fishing in Colorado, and Cassie didn't want to get out, so she just went to looking around with her binos and figured out that she really, really likes that. She likes glassing up animals. It's one of her favorite things to do.
And gazing upon animals.
Yeah, figured out. We were up in Independence Pass, and so, like, you know, the tree line was only 1,000 feet above us or whatever, and there was elk all over the place up there. They'd go up there and lay in the snow and stuff to cool off. Mm-hmm. So, should be pretty fun. But yeah. Have you been on the maps too much in preparation for this hunt?
I have been on the maps some.
Yeah.
Trying to get in touch with the guy who's drop camping me.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult when your outfitter lives in a very remote place that doesn't have very good cell service.
Mm-hmm. Probably the right kind of guy to be outfitting you, though.
Yeah, he probably knows the country all right. Yeah. So, but I don't know exactly where I'm going to be, but mm-hmm. you and I have done some map scouting and found, you know, some good-looking stuff way up high, like above 12,000 feet.
She's so high, yeah.
She's so ugly. So, yeah, I've been doing a little bit, but not a ton. I mean, it's kind of one of those things where, like, they're going to drop me in a place where they probably historically know mule deer have been or have done some scouting this summer.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's going to be more of a glassing situation than it is a map mm-hmm. scouting situation, probably. I mean, they'll... Main thing I'll use maps for in there is probably, like, just navigating the elevation mm-hmm. as much as anything.
Yeah, that's a big deal for sure. And Onyx has a couple pretty cool tools to help you do that. There's a lot of these places, especially in the backcountry, there's trails and stuff that are marked on, you know, USGS maps, which gets converted into Onyx shape files and stuff. And Onyx does a cool thing where they show you the elevation gain and loss intensity on the trail. So it's a pretty helpful tool for mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. And so that's one of those things that, like, doesn't apply too much in the whitetail world, but definitely kind of out west. But I think that there are quite a few things out there that are overarching concepts or thoughts that we can apply to map scouting, no matter if we are scouting for elk, deer, mule deer, or a place to go fishing. All right. There are things that we can think about whenever we are map scouting. So that's what we're going to talk about a little bit today as maybe a preview to what the event in a couple weeks is going to be like. We'll probably do more of a deep dive into specific things, very whitetail centric, of course, because we all love to whitetail hunt, and it's the longest season that we get to enjoy, so that's probably mm-hmm. one of the big reasons that is. But if you got some elk questions and stuff, we can definitely talk about that stuff too, or mule deer. But anyways, we'll probably do some overall general thoughts about map scouting and our approach today. So just maybe a couple tips that Tyler and I have. I'll go ahead and go first, unless you got one you're real excited to talk about.
Nothing too super exciting.
Okay. Yep. So I think that one of the things that will help people map scout better is to understand the habitat needs of whatever they are after, and then look for those type of things on a map. So it's not saying everywhere you find, you know, a southern red oak tree is that you're going to find deer, but it's much more of, hey, deer in this country have a limited resource of timber and cover from wooded areas. So start looking for wooded areas, you know, or, hey, I'm trying to catch fish, and I can tell that there's a spreader dam downstream of this spot on Onyx, and that means that this is going to be a big, deep, slow pool, and that's not really my favorite thing to go after. You know, that's not as much applicable for a lot of people, but it's something that you and I think about probably, mm-hmm. especially in the summertime. But understanding the habitat that you're looking for and understanding what that looks like on a map is pretty important. And I think that part of that is actually correlating things within person scouting, or at least looks from the truck and looking at it on the map. So for instance, you're about to go to Colorado. You're probably not going to, or decent chance you don't get to see the exact place you hunt, but Colorado is full of habitat types that are a lot like that. You know, high peaks with some sort of vegetation above tree line and then tree line below that. You can still work on your map scouting skills and brushing up on that stuff by going up there during vacation, taking your binos, glassing up there and being like, oh, that's some type of willow tree when it looks like this on Onyx. And versus like, oh, that's like a field of lichens whenever it looks like this. Or, oh, that's like a sandy or, you know, dirt face versus, what's it called? I can't
remember. Scree.
Scree, yeah, like which is a bunch of rocks and like shale falling off or whatever. You know, so all these things you can kind of vet.
They call them rock slides too.
Yeah.
Rock slide. It's a rock slide.
Is it? Yeah. I saw that Rocky Mountain National Park is putting out like falling rock places and places people aren't supposed to go right now and stuff.
Really?
I thought that was kind of weird. Yeah.
Was it just all of a sudden the mountains are falling apart?
Yeah,
all
of a sudden the mountains just are changing. I don't know. I don't know if it's geoactivity or drought or maybe they're just people like to just be like, oh,
yeah,
so
sensationalism
might be a little short on things happening. It just might be a normal summer, you know. So it might be like, ah, rocks are falling in the mountains. Can you imagine? You know, I don't know. I don't mean to make light of something that might be dangerous, but anyways, I thought it was kind of interesting. So understanding the habitat you're looking for and how animals relate to that is probably a big thing to think about. For map scouting, and a pretty big tip that I have.
Yeah. You know, in the same kind of vein here for me, like one thing I like to think about is a couple of things. A, what's the, like, you know, you got to know what your kind of physical capabilities are. And when you're getting ready to go somewhere, like say you're going out of state to hunt, if you know, if you want to really dial into something that you can be successful in, I think you have to A, find your physical capabilities, and B, find your natural capabilities maybe too. So like physically, a person who is you know, maybe 6'2", 300 might not want to spend a lot of time in the elevation type land, right? But he may be able to, like, bust through vines and stuff easier than a little lightweight mountain hunter guy. You know what I mean? So there's not to say that, you know, he's at a disadvantage in all situations, but like a guy that's a bigger, heavier dude may not want to do that kind of stuff. Also, if you're older than younger and these different things, but kind of the same way that you discussed just now, like taking those maps and understanding, like, and stuff that you've hunted, what is the elevation? What are the elevation and the topo lines look like? Are they this close together, you know, or not? And so basically relating that around to different maps and finding out, you know, what you can do. So for instance, in West Virginia, which we just put out a West Virginia Map Scout video, it's like tons of hills, right? So you can see that pretty easy from the map. But like in Iowa, you may not really recognize that kind of stuff, especially if you're not using the hybrid layer, because you feel like there's a lot of flat farm country, you know, like where I hunted southern Iowa few years back. There is a lot of flat country, but I ended up, you know, on a ridge top one morning hunting. I almost killed a buck, should have killed a buck. My camera had a malfunction, or my camera arm. But I was on top of like a pretty steep ridge that came straight out of a creek bottom, basically. So it was a pretty good haul up, right? And a lot of guys may not want to do that. So like, you know, I pretty much always have hybrid mode on when I scout. And that way I know like what I'm up against. And for me, you know, I try to stay in pretty decent shape. So there's a little bit of me that like wants to get away from people, or a lot of bit of me that wants to get away from people, and there's a little bit of me that will do it by physical exertion. And so, you know, if I can put if I can go uphill twice, a lot of times I'm putting a lot of people behind me. So, you know, it really does come down to, like, how hard do you want to work? If you don't want to work that hard, that's okay. Mm-hmm. Just go find some flat country, you know, and find a place that is what they call overlooked, or just a place close to the road. Because I ended up killing in Iowa, 80 yards off the road. I mean, you can make it easier on yourself.
Yeah, and quite honestly, brushing up on some map scouting skills can make it to where you don't have to be, like, the line that I say from time to time is, if you're going to be dumb, you better be tough.
Yeah.
And you make yourself smarter. That way you don't have to be as tough.
Yeah.
You know, and that's okay. You know, toughness kills big deer, but so does intelligence. So if you learn how to map scout, you can might find you a spot that's not very hard to get into, that's still a dadgum honey hole.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So your tip is to understand your limitations and key in on your strengths.
Yeah, but also what your strengths are, like you said, can be seen on maps. So, for instance, like some dudes, you know, a dude might be 5'6", and if he's 5'6", he probably hides pretty well in the grass. So open country might be his cup of tea, right? Mm-hmm. He might be pretty good at it. He might have done it a few times and been successful at it. You know, other guys might be 6'2", 180, and can just fly up a mountain. You know what I mean? And that's a good way for that guy to leave people behind.
Saw
or whatever.
A bunch of those types at the Beast Mode event.
I guarantee you, dude.
There weren't a lot of people built like me there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if they were, they were about 40 pounds lighter than me. You know, like, if you're going to be 5'10 and a half, which I got to squeeze every bit of it out of there, I don't know. It depends on which thing I'm measuring on. I never have been a true 6 foot, but I have been over 5'11 at one point in my life. They were like 5'11, 160.
There's plenty of guys out there, you know, have an inch or two added to their height. So
that's right, man. That's why I wore cowboy boots most everywhere in college, you know.
Yeah.
Get an inch and a half that way. And then you can still end up marrying a girl that's 5'4". Those dudes at the Beast Mode event that we went to in Wisconsin were definitely in that vein of the kind that are going to go real tough.
Yeah. I mean, there's also just like, not, it's not always like a physical thing that you have an advantage to, right? Like, you know, there's a guy, I don't pay a lot of attention to him, but a lot of people do. His name's Dan Infault, and he hunts like swamps. That's what he's known for. Mm-hmm. You know, like his swamp theories and stuff. And so, I don't hunt many swamps, so like I said, I don't pay much attention to him. But from what I understand, a lot of people respect what he says about swamps and that kind of thing. So, you know, if you're in swamp country and you travel out of state, you might want to find a swamp to hunt. You know what I mean? May not, but if you want to be successful, that may be the best way to do it, because you have experience in those swamps and you know what to look for and that kind of thing. So just like playing to your strengths, like you said. And then also knowing your limitations is pretty good. And you can figure all that out through maps, you know, if you've spent some time on maps and, like you said, lining it up in person especially.
You know, there's you can learn a lot from going to all kinds of different stuff. But if you get real good at one thing and you're what gets you going is killing big deer, like, if you learn how to be real good at hunting on the ground and rattling in bucks, like, you can have a pretty good hunting life.
Yeah.
Man, if that's just the thing you focus on because you really care to go and do that.
You know?
It's, you don't have to just be like, I'm going to be the guy who tries out all different types of hunting every year.
Yeah.
You know? Because, I mean, it's for a long time in my life, I was a remodel carpenter, right? And I made a decent living doing that. It was nothing special, but me and my wife had food and a place to live. The guys who got real specific and learned how to, like, do the concrete countertops, or guys who learn how to do, like, cabinets or whatever, those guys make money, you know? So it's okay to specialize if that's what you're trying to do.
I mean, there are guys like, I mean, just for instance, everybody knows these guys. They're, a couple of them are friends of ours, but the hunting public, you got Zach Farrenball, who's kind of known for his ground game, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's something that he has been working on the last few years and has grown to become better at it, right? But you, like, you know, Aaron is still spends a lot of time in a tree, right? Mm-hmm. And both of them kill lots of deer, right? Mm-hmm. It's not that one is necessarily more effective than the other. So yeah. like, you know, whitetail adrenaline guys, same way, like they're going to hunt from the ground. That's mm-hmm. what they're going to do. But that doesn't mean it's the best way to kill a deer. That's just yeah. the way they like to do it, or they have grown to, you know, mm-hmm. an affinity towards, or just even like a master, you know, just they're really good at it, mm-hmm. right? But it doesn't mean that, like, those guys couldn't have been good tree stand hunters necessarily. This is just what they ended up mm-hmm. liking and getting making themselves better at. So yeah. with all this said, like, make sure that whatever you do, you know, you're liking it to some extent, right?
So, yeah, exactly.
If you're not, then
you're not going to stick with it for a long
time. Just go work and make money. Yeah, you know what I mean?
That's right. By the way, congrats to our pal Chancey Walters. He got engaged.
How about that?
Yep. Yeah.
Good job, Chance.
Got lured in by the lure of it all.
Oh, so. Punny. So punny.
Yeah. So my next tip for map scouting is zoom out. Okay, I a lot of times find myself zoomed in looking for trails or looking for pinch points or whatever it might be. But I think that a lot of times, and it doesn't have to be the first thing you do. You know, you probably need to figure out where is a place that you're going to hunt, public or private, figure out your access, not like which direction you're coming from, but just a place you can access. But at some point in time, you got to zoom out and look at things on like a county level or maybe a little tighter, depending on how big the county is, I guess. But there will be ways that deer use your property you're hunting specifically. But there will be oftentimes, especially on a smaller property, you know, some of the WMAs that you see in some of these Midwestern states, they might be 80 acres, 100 acres, you know, just a little thing. And the way the deer move on that property is just going to be a smaller just screenshot of the bigger picture that's out there. So especially let's take East Texas where we live. A lot of the WMAs and stuff are on creek bottoms or something like that, or you know, maybe near a river or something. There's a bigger picture of the way the deer use the landscape that is beyond what is on the specific place that you get to hunt. And I think that's a pretty big thing for people to understand and try to figure out. I mean, the easy thing to point out is like most states, the habitats on public and the food sources are on private. Typically, like whenever we're looking around a lot of places, you see that, you know, of course there's different stuff like big woods and all that. But in general, if you're talking about bed to feed and feed being agriculture, the agriculture is oftentimes on private and you're hunting deer that live on public land and go out there and eat at night. So that is like a little bit wider thing. The Onyx crop layer helps out a lot with that. So you can see, you know, what those fields were in last year or what they're fixing to be in this year or whatever. And this is, again, all things that you can go and vet in person or in a vehicle to make sure of. But that's a big thing for you to try to understand, is that there's a deer travel pattern that is not bounded by the boundaries of the property that you live on. Deer will literally cross a fence and put less effort into that than getting a tick off or a fly off their butt, you know, mm-hmm. like it's harder for a deer to get a fly off their neck than it is for them to go over a fence or mm-hmm. under or whatever they end up doing. So, don't think about that as being a boundary. And the same thing goes for water. A big body of water, a big river, yeah, means something to a deer, but, especially in an area that's, you know, historically pretty wet, a small creek ain't nothing for a deer. They ain't thinking about having to cross that. There'll be some specific crossings and stuff, but that's the more detailed stuff. But overall, you need to understand that deer are moving fluidly on and off the property that you live on, I mean, that you hunt on, unless it's a big chunk and you're in the center of it. And then still, like, some deer are roamers, right? Mm-hmm. And we've seen locally on, like, East Texas WMAs that the major riparian systems are highways, and the deer are doing some sort of up and down on that. And if you only have 2 miles, you're only getting 2 miles of the general deer travel. Deer around here move a lot. Mm-hmm. We don't have home bodies as much. There are some, but especially this time of year, it's such difficult forage situations that the deer move a lot to find food and water. And you'll have that run throughout the fall, depending on persimmons and acorns and all that kind of stuff. So I think one of the big things that I think people need to do more often is to zoom out and look at the bigger picture. Mm-hmm. And you might even find out that the place that, you know, you're looking at, say, a 600-acre WMA, and you're like, oh, man, this stuff looks good. It's real thick. Well, thick is only one part of the equation. You know, there might be a bunch of really good food a half mile there and also good cover a half mile there. And the place that you're looking at hunting just because it's thick or looks like it's going to be good deer habitat is missing a big vital portion, or at least doesn't have the holding capacity that something else does because there's food elsewhere or whatever. You know, just because your place looks good, don't think that it's the best, because mm-hmm. there's liable to be something, a different WMA or private or something near there that's way better because of other factors mm-hmm. that are involved. Mm-hmm. So yep. something to think about there.
Yeah, for sure. You know, my kind of last point here is that basically, you know, this, it's a similar concept here, but when you're zoomed out and you're looking at a property, you're looking at an area, I'm thinking back to what we just spent some time in Illinois, Northern Illinois, Southern Wisconsin, and we did some map scouting while we were up there on both public and private. And we spent some time on private. We actually worked on a farm and helped with some projects to earn some permission to a really nice farm up there. And, you know, looking at this is, you and I talk about this a lot, but it's like the map almost always looks worse than what it actually looks like in person. Yeah. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. And so that's one thing I try to keep in mind, but anytime I travel to a new place, I'm like, man, there's just not very much good habitat here. And, you know, but this is the best I can see, and we're going to make mm-hmm. it work. And then you get there and you're like, oh, this is really good, actually, which means everything else is a potential spot. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? So basically, keep in mind that it's, in at least for me, this is a truism, but maybe not so much for you, but it's almost always going to look a little bit better. And so with that in mind, this particular farm we were looking at, it has a bunch of tree lines and kind of some, you know, creek systems, but there's lots of farmland. And I think in the ag country, in farmland, you're going to end up with this same kind of thing going on overall, where like most of the ground is farmed and it's got corn or beans on it. And then, you know, everything that's kind of unsuitable is, mm-hmm. Is in, you know, timber or brush. And so I end up seeing these big old chunks of, you know, ag with these little creek bottoms or, you know, tree lines and stuff. And I'm like, man, there's only one spot on this place that has really cover that's going to be good. And then you get there and you're like, whoa, that tree line is like 100 yards wide right there. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a fence, a brushy fence row. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And you can't see nothing through there. And you dive off in there and there's rubs all over the place and, you know, trails cutting every which way, trying to get across through that thick, nasty stuff. And it just ends up being way better than you thought it was. Mm-hmm. And so like all of a sudden this property that I thought had like two or three spots on it becomes like really good. Mm-hmm. And I think that happens a lot where even in a lot of cases when you and I hunt, you know, the, like if we hunt more open country, that stuff, you know, it's a gamble, because if you get too many guys hunting that stuff, I mean, there's not enough spots. A lot of that land that they put into, you know, public access or whatever is just like, you may be able to shoot some quail on it mm-hmm. or something. You know what I mean? It's like really not deer hunting property, a lot of it. And so with that in mind, like if you get a couple of different groups or a couple of guys hunting different properties in the area, you can run out of spots real quick. So it is a gamble, but to an extent, like when you get out there, you start to go, you find a property and you're like, well, this is better than I thought it was. And then with that in mind, all of a sudden it opens up like the potential that there are other properties that can be pretty good. And what you end up running into a lot of times is like some of that stuff is pretty much just, you know, covey of quail country, but every once in a while you get one of those properties is wide open covey of quail country, and it actually like leaks off on the backside elevation wise, and you can't see it from the road for the most of the property, and it ends up being a place that like deer are. Mm-hmm. So one thing you don't think about in those situations is the elevation until you get there and you're like, oh, okay, this is actually a property that's worth something. And we've seen that before where like we'll go through and mark every property we can in, you know, 100 square miles or whatever, and say these are the properties we want to see that we can't for sure tell if they're good. And we end up going to most of them, and you know, at least over the years or over the season or whatever, and they end up most of them not really being worth hunting. Mm-hmm. Most of them aren't, but you find a couple of surprises in there a lot of times. And mm-hmm. once you've seen that stuff, so it's just something I guess that I'm saying is keep your mind open about that stuff. Always, you know, for me at least, I always got to realize that the properties are probably a little bit better than I think they are. And that stuff that looks real short brush, a lot of times that map is 5 years old and it's grown up to 10 foot of brush and Russian olives and CRP grasses and all that good stuff and cedar trees. Mm-hmm. And it ends up being way better than what the map looked like because it was cleared, you know, a year before the map picture was taken. Mm-hmm. So just keep that in mind as you go throughout scouting on stuff and give yourself like more options than less, right? Don't go into a property and be like, I got to make this work. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you're hunting public stuff, then just, you know, be ready to move if you need to and make something work. But at the same time, if you find something good, there's a good sign, not too many people around, stick with it. Find out.
Yeah.
I mean, there's going to be a good deer on it somewhere. So
yeah, absolutely. Don't be afraid to sit back and do some glassing. Mm-hmm. But that's more, and I can dive off into like real hunting tactics real quick. We're trying to do map stuff. I do have one last map thing to think about. I could go on and on about this, and that's what this event's going to be really good for. It's hard for me to stop, but while it's on my mind,
we got to save some stuff for the people who are coming to eat Mexican food, you know?
And don't y'all worry, we got you some stuff. We got some, I'm trying to find something kind of catchy to say, but I can't, it's too early. Dad, yummy.
I know, dude.
But
it's like 6:30 in the morning.
I know, for some people. Understand the season that you're going to go hunt and map scout for that.
Yep.
We are going to be in some states this year in October. We're going to be in some states in November and some states in December. You need to understand.
There's a Christmas in every one of those months.
There
Did
is
you know
a
that?
Christmas in every. Well, I don't think there is a Christmas in December, which is ironic.
No, there is.
There is?
December 25th.
Oh, that's true. That, yes.
It's not the Christmas that you were thinking of. Yeah.
That's Xmas. Christmas is... Christmas. Oh, gosh. Christmas is actually out on YouTube these days. I don't know if y'all know that or not.
Yeah, recently, actually. Yeah. If you haven't seen that video, our top fails of 21 are now up. So all those guys that really hate what we do can go watch this.
And just love it.
And love it, man. Yeah. And just score on us, man. Just like you've got the comment section to yourself.
Yeah, dude.
And you've got at least probably a couple minutes, if not several hours or days, before somebody deletes that comment and says, this guy is a joker and doesn't need to be on our comment section. But until then, you can score on us. And you know, that's what this video is about. Hunter, you know, is fully open to people just, you know, scoring on him about deer.
He, in fact, needs it, to tell the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So
while, after you score on people, think about the season you're going to hunt. Because we have looked at some different maps. We use Onyx a lot for the arrow, but you compare it to, like, Google and a couple other things, and you can get different seasonal views. Well, if you're looking at a Google map that is taken in the dead of winter, but you're going to hunt a place on October 1st, there's a real good chance the deer are doing something 90 degrees different and that the trails that you see aren't actually what the deer are doing. Now, there's a chance that it does work, and it is a pretty good template to look at, but you need to understand when you're map scouting, correlated to ag and correlated to what deer are going to be doing, you know, socially, you're not going to hunt. You could. but it might not pay off as good to hunt a pinch point on September 25th for like a weird opener or whatever as it does on November 5th, right? Because deer are doing a lot different stuff socially on those dates. Also, it may or may not pay off as much to do something like hunt water on November 5th as it does in late September, early October. Or it might, depending on your tactic and what you know about deer. But in general, you need to think about the season that you're going to hunt. You know, you're not going to go try and hunt oak trees for a deer hitting acorns that are dropping on January 5th, because it's just not really a thing you see very much except for a few specific locations in the deep south, right? So I think when you're map scouting, you have to have a concept of the seasonality of deer season, right? In general, October 1 through December 31 is a time when all people can hunt, and there are not going to be a lot of similarities in October 1 and December 31. Those times are going to be a lot different. So understand where you're at on that calendar and relate that to your map scouting and your strategy when you are picking out places that are potential spots you need to go scout and hunt.
Mm-hmm.
So
I like it.
That is, you have anything else? You're saving it.
No, yeah. I mean, I start getting too detailed whenever I get much further than this so far. So.
Okay. So if you want the details, you need to know the deets on what we're going to be doing down in Buda. Beautiful Buda, Texas.
Beautiful.
All right? Buda, Texas is less than 2 hours from Houston, I believe. Let's just do that right quick. Make sure. All right.
It's basically South Austin. So what you can do is you can go down there for a weekend. Take your lady if you want. She can come to this event as well and not feel too out of place. We're all kind. And you can hang out Friday night, eat Mexican food, hang out at the event, get you some new shirts, and you can wear those shirts to Die Due the next night, which is Jesse Griffith's restaurant.
Who get the pork chop.
He's the James Beard award-winning chef, Jesse Griffith's, these days.
Mm-hmm.
And KC says get the pork chop. I would say get the Neil Guy appetizer. Mm-hmm. And there's an assortment of awesome drinks and teas and all kinds of stuff there.
Yulpon tea?
Yulpon tea.
How about that?
And so you can take her out for a night there, and you can really get some brownie points, have a great weekend in Austin, head on back, and it'll be a fun weekend. There's plenty to do down there, and we're going to have a lot of good things going on. Like we said at the beginning, it's basically a Q&A session. It's going to be some map stuff. You can ask any question you want, and we'll try to answer it. And then we're going to also be watching the Oklahoma public land buck from last year, about 2 months before anybody else gets to watch it. We're going to be giving away free Onyx, free shirts, free arrows. And we're going to be doing one last thing. What's the last thing we're going to be doing? There's another thing we're going to do, and I can't remember what it is. Mexican food. That's it.
Yep.
We're going to eat Mexican food.
Yeah, buddy.
That's a highlight, dude. Chips and salsa, man. I'm telling you, yeah.
Oh, golly. Is there any significance to the chips and salsa?
There is for me.
Me too, baby. I love me some chips and salsa.
Yeah, if you're from up north, maybe not.
That's right.
From Michigan, say.
Michigan or maybe
Idaho,
something like that. You might not know. But down here in Texas, there's a big significance to
Snifficance.
Yeah. It smells good. Salsa. You got to have the right stuff, man, and we're going to make sure we got the right stuff. It ain't going to be no Tostitos and Pace, you know what I mean? Like,
which I mean is fine.
It's fine.
Know. It's
it'll make do.
I can promise you it goes over the top of a lot of things.
Oh, that's right. Well, guys, remember to keep your salsa in order, keep your chips fresh, and remember, this is your element.
Live in it.
You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins. Hey everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meet Eater Live, head it back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29th, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30th, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1st, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2nd, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4th, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5th, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at themeateater.com. Hope to see you at the show.